The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, here at Edstone once again. Not quite as beautiful of a day as last time I was able to be up here and looking out the window, but a little overcast, a little drizzly, but still we're nice in a nice new studio up here. Well, initially I planned on talking about some news for a bit and then getting into a bit of a different subject in the second half, and then I started pulling together all of the different interesting bits of news from the last few days and ended up not having any space left over for what I was thinking of getting into in the second half. So I think we'll save that for another day and just spend the show, rather than trying to squeeze it in and shortchange the subject. And we'll spend the day looking at some important pieces of news, because there's been a lot over the last few days. A lot of what I want to do today is kind of pull together some strands from several different stories that really, you know, the news that we've been seeing over the last few days, a lot of it just is right down the line in terms of what we're watching for here at the Trumpet. Bits of news that just absolutely confirm things that we've been saying for years. If you're just looking at the news today and all of the bits and pieces of information that we're getting, it just absolutely confirms what we've been saying for years, and what we've been saying for years because of Bible prophecy. Because of what the Bible says, and it sounds unusual to use the Bible to guide your news watching, but there's so much to confirm that approach in just what we're seeing every single day. And I'll start quickly by just mentioning poor Japan getting pounded. That seems the source of some of the top stories for the last couple of days. As I said, I'll just mention this one pretty briefly, but there was the massive typhoon that they had on Tuesday, killing at least 10 people, injuring more than 400. That was Typhoon Jebi. There were winds of up to 135 miles an hour, 1.2 million people evacuated, 20 inches of rain in 24 hours in some places. The video footage from that is really dramatic, with roofs blowing off, a 290-foot tanker being blown off its moorings, swept off its moorings, and smashed into a bridge. Then they got hit again with an earthquake. Then after all of this rain, after all of this typhoon, they were hit by a 6.7 magnitude earthquake, and then that led to mudslides. After all of the rain, that earthquake killed 8. There are still, last I checked right before coming on, about 40 missing. 3 million people without power. So we're just seeing more and more of these weather disasters. Meanwhile, you've got all of the speculation about hurricanes building and what's this hurricane season going to be like. They've had just that record California wildfire season, fires up in British Columbia. We've had a record weather and drought over in the UK and a lot of Europe, and I've seen articles over the last few weeks speculating what that's going to do to the market for animals and meat over the next several months, because that's impacted farmers and their ability to harvest hay, which is going to seriously impact the ability for them to feed animals over the winter. So a lot of unusual weather and weather disasters as usual. Here's what we wrote on the Trumpet about that the typhoon yesterday. Japan is not the only country that has been affected by several major natural disasters this year. Nations across the globe have suffered massive earthquakes, hurricanes, typhoons, volcanoes, floods, and wildfires. These days, disasters that are labeled worst ever, worst on record, and worst in history have become all too common. And then this article states, this increase in serious disasters was actually prophesied in the Bible. quotes in Matthew 24 when Jesus Christ himself, when he's asked, well, you know, what would be the sign of the end of this age and of his return? He said, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in different places. And that's what we see. And he said, all this is the beginning of sorrows. Sartical warned, we can expect natural disasters like Typhoon Jebi to increase in frequency and destructiveness. So more natural disasters that we are seeing around the world. And we have our free book or booklet, Why Natural Disasters, that goes into much more detail about, you know, why are all of those questions around natural disasters, why a loving God would allow so-called natural disasters, what the Bible says about them, what Bible prophecy says about these natural disasters. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com, and we're with all of our material. We're more than happy to send that to you, to ship it to you anywhere in the world. You're certainly more than welcome to read those books and booklets for free online, and you know, we give them to you in just about every format you could want, downloading PDFs and Kindles and iBooks and all of these different formats. But we're especially happy to send you the print copy that you can study and mark up. And as I said, we'll send that for free anywhere in the world. So you can just really study what the Bible says about these news events. Because all of these different news events that we see, they do just confirm and prove the Bible. And that the Bible is a book for us today. Well, and I wanted to follow up as well on a news story I covered a few months ago. Back then, I spoke about why China was buying up ports and sea gates all around the world, and how it was using its finances to gain control of sea gates. Well, we had another big story along this line about China using its loans and using debt to get control of other countries, where they announced a $60 billion push into Africa. Here's the headline from the Times. Debt colonialism fears as China put $60 billion into Africa. They wrote, China has pledged $60 billion in loans and investments in Africa, strengthening its grip on the continent in a show of financial firepower and strategic intent. And they're exactly right to focus on that strategic intent. This is not just China acting out of the goodness of its heart. The package, it writes, announced by President Xi at a gathering of African leaders, includes loans, credit lines, and direct investment, as well as a commitment to write off some debt owed by the poorest nations. China, they write, has been criticized for debt colonialism, making loans that it knows states cannot repay, and then using the debt as leverage to secure land or strategic infrastructure. And that's exactly what we've seen them do. China's investment in Africa in the past decade has been prodigious, they write, and financing has more recently been accompanied by more troops. Last year, it opened its first overseas military base in Djibouti, East Africa. The financial package includes $20 billion in credit, $15 billion in aid and interest-free loans. Anyway, it just gets into some more of those details and the breakdown of where that comes from. It also says that Xi also pledged to set up a security fund to provide military aid and support for intelligence and anti-terrorist efforts. So be getting more involved in the region's military. It talks about how they may soon overtake the US as Africa's top donor. And the Times also, they had a separate article from their Africa correspondent, which states, in the short term, Chinese investment is highly attractive to weak African governments struggling with low incomes and growing populations. Unlike financial support from the West, which comes slowly and bound by accountability conditions and performance targets, Chinese funding mechanisms are quick, with no such strings attached. Environmental concerns are not a priority. Corporate social responsibility goalposts are moved. So up front, the Chinese loans look very tempting. They don't come with all of the conditions that European loans have or American loans have. There's none of these, you know, a lot of those will come with stipulations to make sure that the money doesn't get wasted on corruption and doesn't just go to the president's best friends and family. China doesn't have that, and that makes it attractive, especially if you are a bit corrupt. They can get, but then it also means they can just get that money much more quickly. But then this article goes on to write, China's investment is often in the form of equipment, materials, and a skilled workforce. But when it comes to paying back the debt, it wants hard currency. Failure to pay a debt is already leading China to seize strategic assets in lieu. So it's gobbling up these strategic assets. When I talked about this show a few weeks ago, we talked about that port in Sri Lanka that China had taken over because of Sri Lanka not being able to pay back its debt. We talked about a number of other islands and sea gates. You know, Tonga was talking about how Tonga saying, well, they're worried they're going to be in a similar situation. There's concerns that Vanuatu could be in a similar situation, Djibouti, and just a whole range of sea gates. This article talks about Zambia, where they're struggling to pay back $8 billion in project finance. And so they say a Chinese company's taken over the national broadcaster. The state electricity company, ZESCO, is in talks to become about a takeover by a Chinese company after its debt levels became unserviceable. So in Zambia, you know, China may soon be running the national broadcaster, the main TV channel. And of course, I'm sure that means that their content will be coming more pro-Chinese. You can control so much of a country by controlling their the media. And we're seeing that in the United States. And that's the other story that I'll probably leave for Mr. Flurry, that New York Times report that came out today from an anonymous Trump insider or White House insider, a senior official at the White House, who said, there's a whole load of us and we're all working to undo everything that Donald Trump does. We're trying to stop and oppose him. I guess not everything. They said the things they agree with, they support, and the things they disagree with, they work to stop. And, you know, just more. That's just such open and concrete evidence of the deep state operating within the United States and opposing Mr. Trump there. But then you see the power that the media has in whipping up this frenzy against Mr. Trump. Well, in Zambia, it's China that's going to be having all of that power, taking over the state media, and then the electricity company, running the electricity company. And you've seen what Russia can do when it starts taking control of a nation's resources and the gas that it uses to run its electricity. So China needs to be taken seriously as a growing power. There's another story that came out over the last few weeks when we wrote up on our website, came out on August 29th, that China may be building a secret military base in Afghanistan. It came from a story in the South China Morning Post that, it cited anonymous sources saying that China was planning to station at least one battalion of troops in this base to train Afghani soldiers, which is a major step for Chinese-Afghanistan relations. China denied it, but as we talked about in that article, China also denied a whole load of these kind of anonymous reports that later turned out to be true, like China building islands in the South China Sea, like planning to have a military base in Djibouti, which it denied until it opened. And so now they may be moving into Afghanistan. Just a year ago, China had no overseas military bases. Now they've got one at one of the world's most important maritime choke points, just down the road from Africa's only military base in Africa. And I mean literally just down the road, not kind of euphemistically 200 miles away. But it's just, a few, maybe even under a dozen miles away from America's only military base in Africa. It looks like they're building one in Afghanistan. They're building a military base at their port in Pakistan. So you're getting this huge growth in Chinese military bases, going from nothing to having a few now dotted around the place in just a year. And we've had a few other stories about the rise of China's navy coming out over the last week or so. Its first homemade aircraft carrier, the Shandong, had its second set of sea trials starting on August 27th. That it's still on track to be officially commissioned into the naval service next year. And so that means there was a new story on this last week where China's coming close to having its first aircraft battle carrier group. This force for projecting power around the world. They've also accelerated construction on their third arc aircraft carrier. And that's a step up from the first two. It'll be bigger. It will have a catapult so it can launch more capable types of aircraft. It will mean less wear and tear on the planes that it launches and will mean that it can put more aeroplanes up into the air in a shorter period of time. In recent weeks, they've also launched the Nanchang, a Type 00 or 055 destroyer. That's having its first set of sea trials. And this is Asia's largest non-carrier warship, a guided missile destroyer. In some ways, I think I've seen reports talking about how it's more like a cruiser. 112 vertical launch cells it has. So these are all ships. They're all what they're called blue water ships. These aren't about just patrolling and looking after Chinese coast anymore. This is about China developing the ability to project power all around the world, to extend the reach of its navy. And at the same time, it's tightening its grip on the South China Sea. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry wrote about the South China Sea in July 2016. And he wrote, "The American military is retreating and other great powers are coming in to fill the vacuum. China is intimidating the nations of Southeast Asia into submission to its will. Everything is heading in the direction of war." But back in 2016, China didn't have any overseas military bases. Now they've got, or very close to having at least three. And you've had all of this expansion that's come since then. Now, the Bible has specific prophecies about America and Britain having their access to global trade cut off. And so now you see China developing the ability to sail around the world, developing bases around the world. One of them, as I said, near one of the world's most important maritime choke points. It was because of these prophecies that Mr. Flurry said that everything is heading in the direction of war, and we see this being a major driver of Chinese action still today. Another really important prophecy we focused on and piece of news to watch with Russia and China, or with China, is their relationship with Russia. And there's some very important bits of news surrounding this at the moment as well. Russia is getting ready for their largest war games since the end of the Cold War. They are scheduled to begin on Tuesday. And guess who's invited to these largest war games that they've had in decades? China. Reuters had a piece just making some really good points about these war games just a few days ago. And they wrote, "Coming 6 months after Beijing's biggest ever offshore naval drills, the joint war games are another reminder of how central military posturing is now to the world." The joint war games are another reminder of how central military posturing now is to the world's two most powerful authoritarian states. So the world's two most powerful authoritarian states, they more and more are getting into showing off their power. Showing off that they can deploy troops in massive formations, intimidating nations around the world. Reuters writes, "While neither likely desires or expects war with the United States or its allies, both Beijing and Moscow want to give every impression they are increasingly ready and are relying on that message to dominate their neighborhoods and intimidate less powerful nearby nations. Both countries also have an unambiguous message for the Pentagon that if war should come in Eastern Europe or the South China Sea, the United States would risk serious losses if it tried to intervene." They write that these landmark military exercises are part of a much wider picture of investment, development, and weapons trials, even if the outcome has been mixed. They talked about how there are reports that Russia tested a nuclear cruise missile somewhere in the Arctic last year, and they're still trying to recover it, which is a little bit scary. The articles for the latest Trumpet print edition went up online yesterday. I had one in there about the new nuclear arms race, about the push from some of these powers to develop new types of nuclear weapons. And I looked into that new nuclear cruise missile, and it's a pretty terrifying weapon. It's one that America abandoned work on back in the 60s because they basically found that the only way they could think of doing it back then, a nuclear-powered cruise missile would end up just spewing out all kinds of heat and deadly radiation all along its flight path and just cause a huge amount of devastation, potentially to your own country or the area that it's launched from. So they gave up on that. But that's what Russia is pushing to do, and it seems like they may have lost one. Going back to this article, they write, China, meanwhile, is reported to suffer its own significant increase in military aircraft crashes over the last 2 years, particularly in the South China Sea. But then they make a great point. Mauritius makes a great point about this. It's a stark sign of how much risk these countries are willing to take on their quest for military power. Arguably significantly more than the United States or any of its European or Asian allies. So these two powers are really determined to push for military power, for increased military spending or military military dominance. Real Clear Defense talked about this as well. They had an article at the start of this week, a rehearsal for global war, talking about these same exercises. They wrote, these forces will allegedly exercise in something approaching real combat conditions. Observers have naturally focused on the exercise's size and scope and on China's participation, and we'll talk definitely more about that. But he says, it says there are some other dimensions. Clearly, Russia is rehearsing a large-scale war. And these exercises, they're called Vostok 2018. And it writes that Vostok 2018 will likely stress and thus test Russia's steady developing capabilities for mobilizing the entire panoply of reservists, multiple militaries at its disposal, along with the civil administration. So they're doing tests for military, for total war, basically. It writes, furthermore, since all the exercises invariably parallel or contain sizable nuclear exercises, and Russia's two nuclear fleets are participating, this represents another example of rehearsing conditions for nuclear operations. So Russia's practicing for nuclear war in these attacks or in these exercises that they've got China invited along for. Now they've held these exercises, they've scheduled these in what's geographically Asia rather than Europe because there are international treaties and things that cover what military exercises are allowed to take place in Europe and at what point observers have to be invited from other countries and this kind of thing. You know, Russia skirted around those in the past anyway, but by holding these in Asia, they've got no requirement to have observers along. They're able to keep some of these exercises more private, less observed by Europe. This article writes, therefore, there's every reason to believe, along with Russian military correspondent Pavel Flogenhauer, that Moscow is rehearsing a global war scenario, along with other small ones that may build into that. Such a scenario likely includes nuclear weapons use and substantial civilian and military mobilization targeted against NATO. The use of airborne forces also suggests the initial period of the war will feature airborne invasions, something Ukraine must take note of as airborne operations are a long-standing Soviet calling card. So, Russia and China working together, practicing nuclear war. How do we respond in nuclear war? With massive drills that cost a lot of money. And like we've talked about, part of the purpose of these drills that is just intimidation. You know, if you can spend all of this money and you can have these massive drills and other nations around you listen to you more, take you more seriously, do what you say, you can get a return on your investment that way. But it also shows just a certain seriousness that these nations are playing, considering the possibility of nuclear war, of being involved in nuclear war, perhaps even of launching nuclear war. They're taking this very seriously. This article also notes, including Chinese forces, means more than signaling a lack of hostile intent or suspicion about Chinese capabilities and objectives. They said that in conjunction with the growing identity of their foreign policies and the impending delivery of Russia's Su-35 fighter, China's presence here tends to confirm Russian analyst Vasily Kashin's remarks that this exercise points to an open declaration of a Russo-Chinese military alliance. So these exercises, they're as good as an open declaration of a Russian-Chinese military alliance. They write that Moscow has previously sought such an alliance, and it need not be a formal document such as NATO's Washington Treaty to meet the Russo-Chinese requirements for an alliance. So these nations are working together, practicing nuclear war. They write also that these exercises graphically and decisively demonstrate the growing intimacy between Beijing and Moscow. We'll get into more of that alliance in just a moment. I also thought, though, this article made another a good point that perhaps even Russia is practicing for something or using these exercises to prepare for something a bit more imminent. That's always a possibility. Every now and again, Russia does use these military exercises as an excuse to get troops mobilized and in position to conduct an attack. Definitely not always. You know, they don't do that every time they have military exercises, and that would kind of defeat the purpose. If they did, it would give the game away. But every now and again, they use these exercises to build for an attack. And this article speculates potentially that they could be preparing for a new phase in the war of Ukraine. Because things have been changing in Ukraine over the last week or two, or few weeks. Russia's been starting to blockade the Sea of Azov and stop Russian shipping there. So Russia recently built a bridge across from Russia to Ukraine, across the Kerch Strait. And that's, you know, Crimea was the bit of Ukraine that Russia invaded and conquered several years ago. And they've built a bridge now from mainland Russia to Crimea. And though most or a huge amount of Ukrainian exports, 80% of Ukrainian exports, they come out into the Sea of Azov. They have to go under now this Russian bridge that Russia's built across the Kerch Strait. And this strait that Russia is developing more and more control of. So 80% of Russia's exports have to go through this choke point, this sea gate that Russia is gaining more and more control of. And now Russia is cutting off Ukrainian trade, trying to stop Russia from using that strait. I didn't note down where this article was from. I think it's Real Clear Defense or Reuters, but they wrote, Russia is effectively taking control of the sea lanes in the Sea of Azov, a move tantamount to a military blockade, some Ukrainian military experts say. They quote Oleska Kara, a former Ukrainian diplomat, who's a chair at the Black Sea Institute of Strategic Studies, saying it's an unfolding aggression that we've seen in Crimea in 2014 and then again in the Donbass. So the Russians are connecting the theaters of war in Donbass and Crimea by making a blockade of Ukrainian Azov seaports and stopping international vessels from shipping goods to and from Ukrainian cities. So as part of this exercise, Russia is surging as part of its nuclear-capable fleet into the Mediterranean, and so this article speculating perhaps that's got something to do with a planned Black Sea attack on Ukraine. It would say, the article says, this would conform to the apprehension that Vostok is a rehearsal for a large, even global war, and it would show Moscow the attack. It would also show Moscow the extent of its capabilities to mobilize simultaneously and rapidly over great distances with large combined forces and even possibly joint forces with China. So these exercises, Russia and China declaring or preparing for nuclear war and almost a declarance of a military alliance. And this is something we've been warning about for years, this relationship between Russia and China, telling you to watch. Herbert W. Armstrong first wrote about the Russia-Chinese axis back in 1934. One of the earliest editions of the Plain Truth magazine. And he wrote that two great military powers will arise in the last days. One of the revival of the Holy Roman Empire by a federation of 10 nations in the territory of the ancient Roman Empire. The other, Russia with her allies, possibly China or Japan. In 1959... just to pick another example, Russia and China, there were big tensions between the two. But the plain truth was actually saying, if these two are going to form an alliance. It said that China would voluntarily submit to Russian leadership in Asia in order to achieve the Chinese long-held goals. They wrote that China's constant dream for centuries has been ultimate world conquest. China knows, however, that in this highly industrialized age, she can only accomplish this dream as an ally of Russia. China is now ready to begin devouring the rest of Asia with Russian secret military backing. So Mr. Armstrong, throughout, you know, from 1934 all the way until 1986, when he died, he was predicting that Russia and China would work together, come together. And these were built off, this was built off Bible prophecy. Revelation chapter 16 and verse 12 talks about kings of the east playing a major role in military events happening in this end time. Ezekiel 38 describes a rational, or a military alliance. And it describes several nations using biblical terms, but you look at who the modern descendants of these nations are. Significant chunk of them are Russia and China, and there are other Asian nations listed in there. Daniel chapter 11 talks about a war going on in the Middle East, and then it talks about tidings out of the north and out of the east, an alliance getting involved in that war out of the north and the east. Well, what's north and east of the Middle East? Russia and China. So for years we've been making this forecast about Russia and China coming together. And Russia and China being aggressive nations, like we spoke about earlier. Russia and China making war. And now you see Russia and China preparing together, doing these military drills together, preparing even for nuclear war. Again, nuclear war is never a pleasant subject to discuss, but the good news here is we're talking about something that leaps right off the pages of your Bible. It's something that proves the relevancy of your Bible to what's going on in the news all around you. It proves the reliability of the Bible, that this is something that you can trust, something that you can build your faith in, something that you can build your hope in. Because the Bible alone contains hope for these times. It tells us that, you know, God isn't going to allow uncontrolled nuclear war to wipe all mankind out from the earth. He has a plan. He's in control, and you know, he has a plan for a wonderful future for mankind. And you can learn more about this alliance that's building in our free book, Russia and China in Prophecy. That will talk about the good news as well, and these prophecies that the Bible makes for the future and the time ahead. You can get that at our website, thetrumpet.com. And like I said, we're more than happy to send those out to you, to send out print copies, and you can read that online. So you can get that book. You can get that Why Natural Disasters that I mentioned earlier as well. We'll take a quick break. And when we get back, I'll kind of string together a final series of news stories today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And if I didn't convince you to write for that free book, Russia and China in Prophecy, maybe that ad did. It's a very dramatic one. I was just saying maybe we need the sound guys over here to have a bwop sound effect that they can play during the show. Add some extra drama to what we're saying. Perhaps even just have epic music going for the whole hour. Well, I think you'd be pretty exhausted after. It would be a very intense hour if we did that. Well, I wanted to talk as well today about some news coming out of Germany. We focused in recent weeks, recent shows on the important story, those demonstrations coming out of Chemnitz and this soul-searching even that has resulted in Germany in the wake of that, where they've been trying to work out what's going on and looking at this rise of the far right in Germany. But I wanted to talk about another series of news stories that haven't received the same kind of media attention. Even that story didn't get the attention in the US that it deserved. But these are some stories, when you put them together, paint a very significant picture, another picture that just comes right out of the pages of your Bible, but then also haven't received any attention in some cases in the news media. They all revolve around Germany's influence spreading abroad, its activities across North Africa and the Middle East. One story you've probably not spotted anywhere in the English language press is that Germany is stepping up its involvement in Iraq. The German press reports that the German military is directly training parts of the Iraqi army. That began on August 11th. Now, in the past, they've been training the Kurds in Iraq, and that was aimed at pushing back the Islamic State and helping the Kurds fight the Islamic State. But now ISIS, the Islamic State's gone, and Germany's expanding its training of Iraqi forces, going beyond just training the Kurds to now just training the Iraqi army itself. They've got around 400 trainers that will be involved in doing that. Why? Well, Germany said that as part of this mission, they're not going to be training any of these popular mobilization fronts, these forces in Iraq that report to Iran. But so this move, moving down into Baghdad, getting more involved with the Iraqi army itself, though, that's going to allow them to keep a closer eye on the Iraqi military and what Iran is doing in Iraq and with the Iraqi military. They might also hope to be able to kind of use that influence to subtly work to make Iran more independent, or Iraq more independent from Iran. It seems like they're hoping to strengthen Iraq's army as an independent force from Iran. We have an article that will be going up on this soon, and it says, as of now, Iraq's army lacks coordination and logistics. Thus, Germany hopes to give the military apparatus the necessary leadership, counsel, and guidance to increase its effectiveness in the country. So they're trying to see, what can we do to draw the Iraqi army away from Iran, to work against Iran's power in Iraq, at the very least to keep a closer eye on Iran's power in Iraq, even if we can't do anything to shift it. So you've got Germany doing that in Iraq. At the same time, we've got Germany getting more involved in Turkey. Yesterday, Germany's foreign minister visited Turkey. German Foreign Policy wrote that this visit was just the prelude to a series of German-Turkish summit meetings that are about to begin. So the Turkish finance minister, he's the son-in-law of President Erdogan. He's going to be traveling to Berlin. Then 28th, 29th of September, Erdogan himself will be arriving in Germany. They're going to be rolling out the red carpet for him and that visit. In October, the economics minister, Peter Altmaier, he's going to be traveling to Turkey, and he's going to bring with him a delegation of German entrepreneurs. And this is especially notable as you've had Germany making this break with Turkey making this break with the United States. Even to the point where America is putting economic sanctions on Turkey, ramping up the the pressure there. They've been putting tariffs on Turkish arms exports. Well, sorry, on all Turkish exports, Turkish imports. They've been trying to make things hard for the Turkish economy. Germany has been standing there doing the opposite, talking about bailing Turkey out, debating how they can bail Turkey out, how they can help Turkey survive these American sanctions. So they're working against the United States and supporting Turkey. And this is a big change over the last few months where, you know, Germany and Turkey have had some pretty public arguments. Now, as we've made the point on this show, some of these key, you know, military contacts and arms deals have kept going despite this tension. But at the same time, there's been a tension there, and that's starting to disappear. And Germany's drawing closer to Turkey. And a lot of this cooperation revolves around Syria, where Germany's also looking to get more involved. Just this week, Russia asked to have a meeting between themselves, Russia, Turkey, France, and Germany on the future of Syria. Brent Nachtigals, he's been covering this on the radio and in articles, and he's been talking about how it looks like Russia wants to get Europe more involved in Syria. You know, they see that there's a possibility for a deal here. Europe wants to stop migrants coming over, and they want to be able to send a lot of them, as many of the migrants that they can that are already in Europe, they want to be able to send them back. And so it looks like that Putin and Russia hopes that Europe would be willing to put money into Syria to help rebuild it as part of the solution to the migrant crisis. That would help Russia out because Russia's short on cash and they don't want to pour a lot of money into Syria. But they hope, okay, well, Europe can do this and it'll be win-win. They can send their migrants back home. They'll have a solution to their migrant crisis. Assad's power will be bolstered and secured. Everyone benefits. That's how it looks like it's going. German Foreign Policy wrote last week how it looks like this might be moving forward. They wrote last year, German business circles have been seeking to gain a foothold in the government-controlled region in view of Syria's forthcoming reconstruction. During the traditional Damascus International Fair held in August last year for the first time since 2011, the German Chambers of Industry and Commerce announced that it is closely observing the developments in Syria, and that there are already a series of cautious initial inquiries by interested enterprises. So German businesses are looking at getting involved in Syria. They point out that this year's fair will start today, actually. And there will be enterprises from 48 countries that had registered by the start of August. And a former Green Party parliamentarian and a businessman from Leipzig, he'll be there at this fair, helping to provide access to Syria for small and medium-sized German businesses. And this individual will be working to establish a German business office in Damascus to try and help German businesses move in there. German Foreign Policy also writes that Syria's reconstruction has been a topic of the recent talks between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Russian President Vladimir Putin. And then it talks more about this plan, these Russian plans to have this group of four countries stabilize Syria. One journalist German Foreign Policy said they have good contacts to government circles. They wrote that Berlin would like to, quote, prevent the collapse of Syria's neighboring states under the weight of refugees, provoking another large wave of refugees to Europe. And they'd also like to, quote, create conditions so that Syrians who've been granted asylum in Germany can return home. They had another article talking about this, and they have estimates saying that it would cost between 250 and 500 billion to get Syria back started after this war. And they write that in Berlin, it has long been assumed that Russia cannot possibly raise that much alone. Moscow desperately needs to rely on help from third parties. In principle, Germany has earmarked funds for Syria, but Berlin insists on having its say on how the country will be reconstructed in exchange. The new quartet is now supposed to make this possible. So we could be about to see more German involvement in Syria. Another story, just from the last couple of weeks, Angela Merkel went on a tour of the Caucasus region. She visited Azerbaijan, where they're now, according to the German Ministry of Economics, they're now considering selling weapons to Azerbaijan. There's been an OSHA arms embargo on Azerbaijan, so Germany has not been selling weapons there. But Rheinmetall has already started entering into negotiations, and Germany might start selling weapons. They're also looking at, or the EU as a whole is also looking at drawing closer to Azerbaijan, forming a strategic partnership agreement with the EU, which would just be a much more comprehensive agreement with Europe than they've had before. Hopping to the other end of this region into North Africa, Angela Merkel was in West Africa last week. She was visiting Senegal, Ghana, and Nigeria. Now, a lot of that was directly focused on the migrant crisis. Nearly half of Senegalese have said that they want to leave their country. Three quarters in Ghana say that. About the same in Nigeria, three quarters. Very significant percentages say they have actual plans to leave. About 40% in each country. They have huge youth unemployment. So Germany's very keen to deal with this situation. They don't want to make the migrant crisis worse. So they're visiting and looking at getting more involved in these countries. Germany has military advisors in Nigeria. This was a report, again, from the last week from German Foreign Policy. According to reports from the troops, German military advisors in Nigeria are not only organizing comprehensive military care from the field hospitals to the rehabilitations for soldiers injured in the war against Boko Haram in the north of the country, they also instruct Nigeria's military in the use of ground radars, which Berlin has provided to the country for tighter border controls. In addition, Berlin has financed patrol boats to enable the Nigerian Navy to stop petroleum theft and smuggling in the Niger Delta. Nigeria was Germany's fourth largest oil supplier by 2015, but then had to reduce exports due to escalating battles with smugglers and militia. So it's just a small effort in Nigeria, not necessarily a huge mission, but Germany's forging links with them and their military. At the same time, Germany's talking about improving its own military. They published a new capability profile, a paper on what the German military hopes to do over the next 5 years or so. The whole document itself is secret, but there have been a few fragments that have been leaked or published, but most of it we haven't seen yet. And it calls for a lot of costly arms projects, new tanks, fighter jets, warships, even space warfare. And it means a lot of new spending. It talks about how Germany must actively shape the global order, which includes the military. Currently, Germany aims to spends nearly 40 billion euros this year on its military. It aims to increase that to 44 billion euros by 2022. But this new report says that it has to go up to 60 billion by 2023. To meet this. So it's calling for a big step up in military spending. And Germany's bringing in more money in taxes than it's spending, so they have room to spend more. So maybe they'll do that. But what to make of all this? Why talk about Germany's arms spending and then all of these deals with Niger and Azerbaijan and Syria and Turkey? Well, this all ties into a very important prophecy. Daniel chapter 11. Talks about an end-time confrontation between the king of the north and the king of the south. And we have our free booklet, The King of the South, that we'd be more than happy to send you, that talks about this prophecy, tells you what it means, proves to you, so that you can see with evidence that the king of the south is referring to Iran or radical Islam led by Iran. The king of the north is referring to Europe, and specifically Europe led by Germany. So you've got this confrontation building. And Daniel 11 and verse 40 says that at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and overflow and pass over. Now, this term whirlwind is very revealing. It tells us a lot about how Germany will take care of Iran and even what they're doing right now to prepare to confront Iran. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry talked about this in A Key of David back in 2013. We'll play some excerpts from that show now as he explains what this whirlwind prophecy means.
But it's like a whirlwind. It is a military attack, but the emphasis is on the strategy.
It comes at this radical Islam like a whirlwind, like a whirlwind. It is a very revealing word if you look into it carefully. Notice what the word whirlwind, Gesenius lexicon, what it says about it: to sweep away in a storm, terror-stricken. It's really something that strikes great terror and in many, many people. And it says they shiver with fear. Another one says the creeping of the skin of a person terror-stricken. But there's more to it that you need to see here. Let me read to you the Moffat translation of that verse 40. When the end arrives, the king of the south shall butt at him, but the king of the north shall storm at him like a whirlwind. It's all of them say it's like a whirlwind. With chariots and cavalry and large fleet, air and sea, and invading his lands and flooding into them, just flooding into them like a whirlwind. It's whirling round and round and round. And that is the significance of this, if you understand it fully. I mean, this is a carefully planned strategy. And Iran and its allies are caught up inside a whirlwind. And you know how a whirlwind whirls round and round and round. But Germany and the Holy Roman Empire could not come against them like a whirlwind unless they were circled around them, unless they surrounded them. They couldn't come at them like a whirlwind. It's all carefully orchestrated and strategized. I mean, everything is thought out very carefully, and they've been planning it for years because they knew this day would come when they would clash with radical Islam.
So they surround Iran and radical Islam. They have all these bases around Iran and radical Islam. And what do we see from our news and even just the news of the last few weeks? Germany looking at, okay, well, what can we do to start to confront or at least keep tabs on Iran, even in Iraq, by working with the Iraqi military? What can we do to start to edge Iran out of Syria and start to get our own involvement into Syria? We've got cash. Can we leverage that to getting some influence into Syria? Kind of the same way that China's doing, where they're using their cash to gain leverage and get control in areas. They've got a close alliance with Turkey. Even when the United States starts cutting off Turkey, while Europe, they still want to do business with Turkey. And, well, Germany's, they've got, even they're working on like a joint tank factory with Turkey. They sell Turkey a lot of arms, building them up. You've got all of these arms sales that they're doing across the Middle East, where they've been selling arms to nations like Saudi Arabia. They've been selling arms to Egypt, where they don't want Egypt to fall into Iran's camp. And so they've been selling them submarines and things like that. And even some of these Gulf states selling them weapons. You've got German troops in Afghanistan, one of the largest German overseas military missions. You know, Britain's gone home from Afghanistan, but the German soldiers are still there. You have German participation repeatedly in the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, where they've often had their boats on the patrolling the coast of Lebanon. So they've got all of these links all around Iran. And then, like I said, just over the last week, okay, so we see Syria, we see Turkey, we see Angela Merkel traveling to Azerbaijan, just to the north of Iran, trying to open up business there. Seeing, well, okay, can we start selling weapons to Azerbaijan? Okay, there's a weapons embargo from OSHA on Azerbaijan, but we don't really mind about that too much. We can get Rheinmetall involved, and let's see if we can start doing some arms deals and getting Azerbaijan involved in this whirlwind strategy. Then on into North Africa, because you have radical Islam with a presence in Libya. You have radical Islam that's directly backed by Iran with a presence in I think it was Morocco or Mauritania, over in the west of Africa. And so you've got Germany with a major military presence in Mali. Germany's own military have talked about Mali being a springboard, a base that they can use to launch across the region if they need to, exactly what we're talking about with the whirlwind prophecy, Germany setting up these bases so that they can project power if they need to. So they've said that's exactly what they're doing in Mali, where they've got several hundred troops, where they're leading the EU mission to train Mali's army. They're leading the EU mission to train Mali's police force. You've got their links like we talked about with Nigeria, Angela Merkel's trip to Nigeria, to Senegal, to Ghana. You've got Italy being quite closely involved with Libya, working with their Coast Guard. You've got Germany paying very close attention to what's going on in Libya. And you've got other German links across the region. You've got Europe, and especially Germany and France, working on creating this G5 Sahel force, where it's basically an African army made up with soldiers from five different nations, paid for in large part by Europe, doing the goals or fulfilling goals that Europe wants within North Africa. You have German generals talking about terror in Africa, makes it clear once again that there is a ring of fire extending from Afghanistan via Yemen, Syria, and Iraq to Africa. So they see this ring of fire and they're working on countering it with their own ring of fire, with their own bases surrounding Iran. So yet another piece of Bible prophecy just leaping off your world news. You can read more about that. We have a short booklet that goes into that in much more detail called Germany's Secret Strategy to Destroy Iran. And then a much more detailed booklet called The King of the South. And again, we'd be more than happy to send you those for free anywhere in the world. You can also read those online and see for yourself just how much the Bible foretold and is all wrapped up in the news events that you see around you. And again, that book, especially The King of the South, also contains that same hope that the Bible contains, showing you the hope that the Bible brings for the future, a hope that you can absolutely rely on because we see its prophecies being fulfilled around us already. That's about it from me today. You can email us and any comments or questions at td@kpcg.fm. Please tune again next time tomorrow here on KPCG.